I'd like to introduce tonight's speaker, Shirley M. from Escondido.
Oh, I can adjust this. Oh, it doesn't squeak. That's cool. I'm Shirley, and I'm an alcoholic. Nice to be here. You have a lot of traffic in this area. We got caught. You're not impressed with that. You live with it all the time, don't you? Yeah. Well, we think we're three of the most patient people in the world, and I guess we didn't blow. I didn't realize this was a combination AA Al-Anon meeting. How nice. I don't see how you Al-Anons do it. I never have been able to see that, but I do commend you. I never would have put up with me, and my husband didn't, but it's a much sadder story than that. I wouldn't tell you all that just right off the top. It has to have a little drama to it. I have been sober since September 26, 1971, so I've been sober a long time and around this program a long time. And I've had 8 sponsors in the 38 years that I've been sober. And every one of them have been exactly what I needed in my life at the time that they arrived. And I have had one or two sponsors, I guess, who passed away. I never would have, you know, never would have left them, but God took them. And I have a home group. It's the Carlsbad AA Workshop. There's a lot of traffic going down that way, too. We get caught in it every week, don't we? So why would we complain about traffic? And my sponsor now is Angie now she lives in Escondido. So I have all the things, and I have several copies of this. So I have all the tools at my possession that should make for a happy and sober life. And I have been sober since my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am most blessed because of that. I started drinking when I was about 15. And I started drinking because I had this real teenage problem, you know. I mean, I was very self-obsessed, very nervous all the time. Because I know you're talking about me and you're watching me to see how I'm doing and if I'm doing it right and all that. And I used to perspire. I mean, not just like, I used to sweat like guys would sweat, you know. And my clothes would, you know, it would show. And it would be down to my elbows and down to my waist if it was really a bad event, you know. And I was so self-conscious about it, you know. I have an older sister, she's 10 years old. She used to put little pads under there, little shields, they called them. And so I'd be dry right at the seam, and then I'd be wet. And I'll tell you, when I took a drink of alcohol, my armpits dried up. And that was my first bit of magic that I found in alcohol. Oh, my God, I could raise my arms. It was freedom. You know, we talk about being freedom from the bondage of self here as sober people. But I was free from the bondage of me when I started drinking. I was so involved with me up here. And, of course, I was between those bouts of drinking. I didn't drink. I don't know. You know, I can't even hardly remember. I say a prayer before I get up to talk. It used to always be, please help me to be honest and not boring. Now it's help me be honest, not boring, and remember. But I had a good time with drinking. You know, it was fun. And I drank for 23 or 4 years, and And I married when I was 16. I didn't get married then. I met a guy that I was to marry when I was 21. And in those days, 21 was like getting old. I was like the last in the group of people that I hung out with to get married. They had children already and everything. And I had been doing a lot of drinking in those 6 years from 15 to 21. But the guy I was going to marry had been in the service in a way, and he really didn't know how much I was drinking. And I don't suppose, I mean, I still had a certain amount of control. He had gotten out of the service in the Korean War, and we moved up to San Luis Obispo, and he went to college up there, and I worked up there. And truthfully, I didn't start drinking a lot when we first got there. But when I drink too much right away. I have that allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind when I am drinking. But in those years, I didn't have to drink all the time. But this is a progressive disease, and to make a really boring story short, when he was graduating from college, about six of us had babies in the same week, just a couple weeks before graduation, you know. So we had had some drinking parties, and it was just a really great celebratory type of time. And we wound up coming back. Oh, actually, we went back to the East Coast and lived for a while. And then we came back and lived in Santa Monica in our hometown. And then ultimately moved out to the San Fernando Valley. And I started having children when I was 25. And I had three children in 3.5 years. And I was sort of overwhelmed by that. I mean, I thought babies were really cute. I mean, this baby, they're really cute. And then they get just a little bit older, and they need things, and they begin to make louder noises, and they get demanding, Some of them even drag their diapers up and show them to you, And, I mean, there's just a lot to do with three kids all. And, that's when I started drinking at home. I had these little ponies of beer that I put in the refrigerator. I think my husband thought they were for the both of us, but every time he went for them, they went, and they were empty. And so I had another baby, which, I don't even know how that happened, but I'd lost track of how you do it. But anyway, 3 years after the third one, there came a fourth one, and I'd had spinal surgery as a young person, and I was beginning to have a lot of trouble with my back having babies, so I went to a doctor, and I also. This is really condensing this story. My mother didn't start drinking until after I did. But in 15 years, she had gotten to the point where she was hospitalized. She actually was going in and out of comas and ultimately died of a wet brain, propped up in a sanitarium in Santa Monica. And I had a lot of what the psychiatrist called unfinished business with her. So here I am now, and my mother wasn't real happy that I was having these children either. We didn't have a really tight relationship. She had a tight relationship with my sister. But with me, when I'm telling her I'm having another child the fourth time, she got angry. What are you, a baby factory? And a lot of things like that had happened between my mother and me. So we just... she sort of was like a constant bucket of cold water in my face. I didn't really know how to handle her stuff. And I was not an emotionally stable person. Some years back, actually before I even knew I was sober for the first time, I had gone to bed at night and And I'd sort of, you know how you sort of twit sometimes, your muscles all relax in one fell swoop. And I had twitched like that, and then I twitched again, and then I had, you know, and I couldn't stop. And I'm twitching all over the place. So my husband's up, and he's studying, you know, he's in college. And I yelled at him, and I said, God, what's happening to me? What's the matter? And he's like, well, geez, I don't know, you know. So he got me up out of bed, and we went for a walk, and finally this twitching settled down. And the next day I went to the doctor, and he told me I'd had an anxiety attack and that I was really lucky. They'd just come out with this new medication. They were called Miltowns. They were tranquilizers. And if I took these the way he was prescribing, I would never have this shaking again. And, you know, he's really right. If you take tranquilizers the way they're prescribed, you don't have to shake. But I was still working at the college, and, you know, I'm nodding off. And so it didn't take long before I realized you could take these the way you needed them, you know. So for the next, let's see, how many years, until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, so the next almost 15 years, I took them the way I needed them. And so I did have that little dependency, and it kept me relatively sane. Honest to God, it did. Like alcohol kept me sane. I'd have gone over the edge many times, not because I had a physical, really physical or chemical problem. I'm not a depressant. I can depress you, but I'm not a depressant. I was not a mentally stable person. As a young kid, my mom used to take me to church, drop me off, and pick me up later, you know. I have ribbons that said I could say all the books of the Bible, you know, that kind of thing. But I didn't, you know, they had this thing, I was a Presbyterian, they had this thing, you were born with a black heart, and then you did all these things to try to get it to a white heart. And I knew I wasn't doing the right things. I was never going to get a white heart. I knew that at 7, you know. And, I was pinching the ears off of the Easter bunnies that the third grade kids had, you know. I mean, that's not a white heart. So, I had, you know. So here I am now with these four kids. And my kids don't have good hearing. I have to speak loud. So they'll understand. They'll get it that they need to pick that stuff up, get back to your room, you know, clean up the table. And I heard later that my husband didn't like that loud noise. He never communicated that to me. We had that kind of a relationship. You don't say anything too deep or too intimate. You know, I used to ask him because I was so desperate for his emotional support. I cannot do this by myself. I used to ask him, God, what are you thinking? And he'd say, my thoughts are private. Oh, God. Man, mine aren't. You want to know what every little thing I'm thinking? You know, I'm telling you everything. I'm nervous. I'm scared. I don't know what to do. And of course, the first shrink that I went to said he just didn't know what to say to me. He didn't know what to say. And it wasn't that he wasn't a bright guy, you know, but he wasn't emotional needy, as emotional needy person. And I was, and he didn't know what to give to that person. And I didn't know how to find my answer. And so I drank. And my answer was in my drinking. I had those moments of calm and peace. I got pregnant again, and now I'd had a real hard time with my back, and my mother had died, and I was having a lot of emotional problems with that unfinished business, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't stand. I lived across the street from a woman that had 10 kids, and when she was having those last kids before we moved away from there, I would hear that baby cry, and I couldn't stand it. I'd close the window, and I'd go to the other side of the house. I felt so responsible for that cry. I felt totally responsible for the world emotionally, and I just felt that way. And yet I knew I had nothing to give. I didn't have anything to give to my own family except screaming and yelling and trying to keep everything clean and tidy. I'd Hexall the floors. I don't even know if they sell Hexall anymore. But I would Hexall the floors, particularly on Fridays, and your eyes would water coming into my house because it was so clean and disinfected. Neurotic. I think that's what they call it, neurotic. And I had a lot of neurotic tendencies, and they only got worse. My husband and I took up tennis. I'd been a fairly good tennis player as a young person. I had good-looking legs. I had nice boobs. I looked good in tennis clothes. And so I took up tennis, I used to shag balls in front of everybody, you know, stick my little butt out, pick up those balls, you know. I found out what other guys were thinking. My husband might not share his thoughts, but other guys did. No. And I got pregnant again. And I was under psychiatric care at the time. I told the guy I drank a lot. He said, oh, you know, don't worry about it. When your problems are solved, you won't drink so much. That's what this guy with this thing hanging on the wall that said he was a psychiatrist said to me. I mean, he must have had a three-hour class in alcoholism, you know, and forgot it all. I mean, what a bizarre thing. But because of my back, and this was, I can't even tell you what year, it was in the late 60s, and because of my mental health, a panel of doctors determined that this pregnancy should be terminated, and my tubes died, and that's what happened. And, you know, a lot changed for me after that. I couldn't get pregnant anymore. I discovered the tennis coach, and we started having he liked me a lot. He understood me. You know, he gave me a lot of emotional support. And so we started having a relationship in the back seat of his car up in some property my husband and I owned in the Santa Monica Mountains, and I don't think I've ever been any happier in my life. It was wonderful. It was the most exciting time of my... I'd never had done anything like that. I never had the chance. But anyway, I got involved in this wonderful relationship. And when you do that, you don't work so hard on a marriage. You sort of forget about the marriage. Oh, yeah, I'll fix dinner. And it tried to make everything look... He brought me flowers one time after this thing had started, and I sweat bullets. I thought he knew, you know. I was scared to death. Anyway, my screaming and yelling, my drinking, everything escalated. And we had this horrible, horrible fight. And he decided he was going to leave. And his tennis partner, his mixed doubles partner, I didn't like playing with him. He looked silly on a tennis court. And so he started playing with my best friend. They were partners. And so anyway, we had this big fight, and he left. And, you know, I stopped seeing the tennis coach because I wanted to, you know, I thought, I really stopped seeing him before he left because I wanted to work on the relationship now. I was getting scared. He said he was going to leave. What the heck am I going to do with these four kids all by myself? You know, what? This is a together project. And he left, and whether I was drinking or not and acting well. And And, of course, I found out about 2 weeks later that he'd been having a relationship with my best friend. And a week after our divorce was final, they got married. Well, obviously, I'd been drinking for the 6 months that it took for the divorce to go through. And I had taken up the F word, and it relieved a little bit of pressure. I could say it about 7 times in one sentence, and I was relieved of a lot of pressure, and the people around me were feeling a lot of stress. And most of those people were my kids. And for the next 2 years, we lived like that. Me screaming and yelling and drunk and calling them all the names, especially my older son, the names I wanted to call my husband. I was throwing at him. My oldest daughter was 12 when her dad moved out, and she became the parent. She'd always been more mature than me. We had both known that since she was about 5, and she began to take care of the kids. And they would go to her when they needed solace, you know. They weren't coming to the drunken, screaming, yelling woman. And that's the way we were for almost 2 years after he left. And I had a friend who had come to AA. And he started calling me and asking me if I... He said, I went through a divorce, and, you know, AA's really helping me with that. I just always had a fresh gallon of wine. I am not thinking of not drinking tonight, you know. And that allergy of the body and obsession of the mind had escalated within me. And now I had a job, but you know, I'm drinking at noon at work. And you know, with 4 kids, you have lots of animals and stuff. We had this mama kitty. That mama kitty hated me. And she used to follow me around the house all the time, just meow, 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 meowing at me, you know. And she would just, and I just hated her. And I put my foot between her two paws, and I'd rock her, and I'd whip her across the room, you know. And she'd come screaming back, meow, 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 you know. And I told the kids, I'm getting rid of that cat, you know. I can't stand that cat. They had other things they could play with. So she had some kittens. So I put her in the car with the kittens, and I took her down to the vet, you know, and the vet said, well, I can take the kittens, but I can't take the cat. You know, nobody wants that cat. And I said, you're right. Nobody wants this cat. And so I was with my ex-sister-in-law, because by now I had come to where I couldn't drive by myself. I mean, I had a little route that I took to get to work, but I couldn't make left-hand turns anyplace. You know, you sit in the left-hand turn lane waiting for that signal, and this goes off. Tells you you're going to go crazy here. You cannot sit here anymore. You got to get out of here. Woo-hoo, you know, you whip around. But you can go everywhere you need to go, making just right-hand turns, and that's what I did. So my ex-sister-in-law was with me with his cat, you know, and we're driving home, and I am not taking this cat home. I'm not suffering through this animal anymore. So I just pulled over and... Woodland Hills, where I was living, and I opened up the door and I threw the cat out, you know, and we went home, and kid told the kids the vet had the cat. And sometime after that, you know, I was on my second 2-a-day Sunday drunk, and I used to play Frank Sinatra's A Man Alone record. Put my head against the sliding glass window and look at the green trees and blue sky and wonder, what the heck happened here? You know, why am I all by myself with empty 4 kids? They were all in bed, and I went into my bathroom. I had a very intimate relationship with a mirror in there, you know, and we're talking, and, you know, and it says back to me this night, you know, nothing's ever going to get better for you, Shirley, until you stop drinking. And I was, totally surprised, you know, and I, but I, so I called this guy, and he told me that if I would not drink the next day, which was going to be Monday, September 26th, that he would take me to an AA meeting. And he did, he came, he took me, and I didn't have the drink. I didn't have a drink. And he took me to the Venice Circle meeting, which I know now is no longer there, but I knew my mother would be very upset about me going to Venice. I'm from Santa Monica. You know, we don't have anything to do with people from Venice, you know. My blurry eyes could not see the multi-million dollar condos down by the ocean there, but there were a couple women speaking that night, and this one woman talked about how she was alone in a room full of people. Not that I'd really allowed myself to be alone in a room full of people because I was too afraid to be with people. But I had stopped, I made this pretense of taking the kids to church every once in a while, and I had gotten to where I had to sit back against the wall because I couldn't stand to have anybody behind me. It just terrified me to have people behind me. I remember I parked once in a strip mall parking lot to go in and get something. All four kids are in the car because I travel with all four kids to protect me while I'm driving. And a delivery truck parked behind me. So when I came out and I had to move, when I have to move, I have to move. And I'm going through all the other stores in the strip mall looking for the truck. Whose truck is that? I've got to go now. I got to go right now. You move that truck, you know. And here's this crazy lady running up and down this strip mall looking for the truck driver. So this other woman talked about how she would she'd go take a shower, and she'd get out of the shower and wipe herself off and get dressed again. And by the time she had finished dressing, the booze was coming out, sweating out of her body. And she smelled just like she'd smelled before a shower by the time she was finished dressing. And I related to that. So I started going to meetings. Mike took me to meetings. The next meeting he took to, it was a speaker meeting in West L.A. And this guy had murdered somebody. I knew my mother was going to be really upset. I am in a room with a murderer now. I mean, he'd been stripped down in padded cells. You know, I'm a little Woodland Hills housewife. I've never seen a murderer before. And it was frightening. But I went with him again. my third meeting. I mean, this isn't even, you know, it's just the way my person was. I'm sitting in this meeting and I'm just sitting there, and some guy puts his hand out with a cigarette in it and burns me, and I'm saying, oh, I'm sorry, like I'd gotten in his way. You know, it's like I didn't deserve any space. You know, the kind of personality that doesn't deserve the space and the air they're breathing. And, you know, basically, I'm not that kind of person. So inside I'm thinking, I know there's a kid here, but I'm using the F word inside of me to you all because, you know, I am something and somebody. I just can't get out of here to be it. I am so locked in with my alcoholism. But I kept going to those meetings. And I think the first miracle for me, I figured out by listening to you enough that if I drank and then tried to come back, I probably could do that. I might have had, I mean, I wasn't as physically ill as a lot of people I know. Not many of us are so physically ill that that we can't do this, but I knew that if I got that thing going, where I could, well, okay, I'm just going to have a drink today. I'll go back there tomorrow. That I would, I'm a starter. I would do that over and over and over. And that's before I even heard about people that went out again. You know, when you're new in AA, you just don't think anybody ever goes, oh, my God, they're here. They're sober forever. And it's not true. And it's such a shock when you first find that out. So I've not had a drink since my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, nor, truthfully, have I had any mind-altering chemicals. But I carried my Valium with me for 3 years. Years. I am about as phony as you can get. I know how to smile well. I know how to sit well on a bar stool, just look like calm, cool, collected. I really got it all together. I tried doing that in AA, and I know I have my Valium in there. If I start doing this again, it will help me. I'm not sure that your God will. I converted to Catholicism before I married my first husband because I loved the drama of the church. I loved genuflexing. I loved the little... I loved that. I did not like what that priest said, but I can take it, you know. The priest I had for convert lessons was adorable. He was so cute that I couldn't quite make it in the class. I had to have private lessons. And then he performed our wedding. And it was great. In that rectory, that place smelled like a winery every time I went in there. You know, they were enjoying. So when you told me I needed to go to God for help, I'm like, I don't think he's going to want me. I yell the F word all the time. I beat my kids. I'm not nice. I'm a screaming, yelling, B word lady. And it's sort of hard to go to God and say, oh, I'm sorry now, I'm better. I'm not going to drink anymore, like me now. And it took me a long time to trust myself. To want to, until this thing happened, you know, I think maybe this is the way a lot of people go. I don't know. I got scared. I didn't, you know, I was afraid, you know, you have to develop a spiritual life here. And I am not spiritual. I'm still yelling and screaming at my kids, sober now. And you can do it louder and better, all those things. And this man told me, Shirley, he said, when you drink like you drink, just not drinking is spiritual for you. And that made me feel great. Okay, I've got a foothold here. I am not drinking. Get down on your knees at night and say thank you for this day of sobriety. In the morning, get up and ask that you do God's will during the day. And those were the beginning things that I did. I did them without feeling. I did them just rote, just because that's what I felt like I had to do. I was afraid to ask anybody to be my sponsor in the very beginning. And, I mean, you know, everything here happens for whatever type of person you are in AA. There's this busy little lady in the meeting that I'm going to. Oh, I got to tell you another story about this meeting. And she comes up to me one night and she says, Shirley, I am going to be your sponsor. I don't like you, but I'm going to be your sponsor. And I thought, we're perfect. I don't like me either, you know, so we're a good match. You know, the first time I went to this particular Saturday night meeting, Mike couldn't go. It was in my first week of sobriety. So I asked my oldest daughter to go with me. Now she's 14 now, and my son is like 12, so he can stay with the kids. And I go in the room, and we sit against the wall, and the door's right over here. This cat comes to the door. And my daughter says, Mom, that's Mama Kitty. I'm like, I had very big eyes then, too. You know, when you stop drinking, you stop taking pills, and your nerve system sort of, you know, I'm like this. And this cat walks in the room and jumps up on my lap. This is the kid. Jumps up on my lap. And this guy from the meeting comes up, and he says, oh, you've met our AA cat. This cat comes here every Saturday night. I'm like, whoa. Nice kitty. And you know, my daughter didn't go to with me anymore there because I met my first best friend in AA that night, and she could drive, and so she would come pick me up. But that cat came. I don't even know how many weeks that cat came. And it would always come in, jump up on my lap, let me pet it a little bit. It was fat and fluffy and clean. And then she'd go away, you know. She stopped going to AA. And some, you know, some half-loaded guy one night at a meeting says, I know why that cat came. That cat came so you could make amends to her, you know. So my journey started, and I started with Edna, was my first sponsor, and she did get me to tell her those things I was never going to tell anybody, and those things that made me feel lower than low, and but my behavior didn't change very much, and my second sponsor was a woman who knew more about relationships, and that's really what I was interested in. I hadn't, you know, I mean, I got four kids. I need a relationship. So I came in. Nobody ever said where I got sober. I just probably didn't hear it. Don't get involved in your first year, you know. And so I'm looking around the rooms. I'm looking for him. You know, I know he's here someplace. And sure enough, when I was about 3 months sober, he arrived. And anyway, he just wanted to be very close friends. He didn't want to be in love with me. And I, of course, needed somebody that would be in love with me and want to marry me and want to take care of me and the four kids. And so that relationship, though it was very nice, and he made me feel less unwanted than I had been feeling in my life. He went by the by, and I met somebody else who had a station wagon that all the kids fit in the car, and he had some kids, and we had a, you know, sort of a family, because he was only 6 months sober. I'm a year and a half now, and of course I'm really well, and he's not, you know, God helped us there too. When I wanted to get married, he didn't. When he wanted to get married, I didn't. And it was just perfect. But he helped me move from Woodland Hills down to San Diego, where I met my present husband, actually. And Kenny and I have been married for 31 years now, almost 31, Christmas. And we've had... We're not really like having an Al-Anon family. We're two alcoholics. Pachoing, pachoing. But we have grown up together here. We were 6 and 7. I have a little bit more sobriety than he does, and that's what makes it work so well. Because I have the greater need to be right all the time. I have found out some ugly things about myself here. And one is, I had this really long inventory that I just had labored over forever and forever. And I read it to this sponsor one night who just sat there and started giggling about it. And in fact, she had me. Tears were rolling down her eyes by the end of this thing because it was so repetitious and so, whatever it was. And she said at the end, Shirley, she said, you just think you have to be right about everything. And you know, I didn't know that about myself. I knew I was a martyr. I know I'm self-pitying. I cried for a year in these meetings. If I had to talk about my divorce, some old timer said one night, "Oh God, do we have to listen to her every week? I mean, what is this kind and loving stuff?" You know, they weren't always like that to me. Thank you very much. But man, I'll tell you, when Bill Allison came around, I was perky. You know, I wasn't whining and sniveling around him. Oh, you've got that ugly word over there. Yes, that was me. You know, I assume because the name of this meeting is dynamic, it is about the change that happens. You know, it happened within the family that I have. I thought, now I'm sober. Oh, people used to say, well, maybe your husband will come back. When's your divorce final? Well, I've been married for 2 years, you know. I mean, because I'm still mourning that divorce. I couldn't get over my divorce because I was drinking at it. I had to get sober to see the reality of what my life was and to begin to heal from that divorce. And then I could move on. Moved on a little quick with Ken, but whatever. We each have sponsors. We each have a program. We'll work it out together. I was mad at him at one time for a year and a half. He didn't even know. That's how good I'd gotten at hiding my feelings. You know? Oh, you did. We've had, in 31 years, you have all the problems that you have in relationships. I had no idea I was a jealous person. I didn't think I was jealous of that ex-best friend. I just hated her guts. You know, I wanted to kill her. But I didn't know that I was jealous. Like Kenny would look at another woman and I felt that jealousy. Jealousy is such an ugly emotion. It robs you of all your self-respect. I had my little sponsor, whose name was also Shirley, and stood about up to here to me. I told her about it. David, he's looking at all these beautiful women. What am I? Shirley, he's an artist. And I'm like, well, I use some other bad language about that. Artist, my foot. I don't know how. You don't get over things like that without God's help. You just do not. You do need to enrich your spiritual life here. I go to a big book study meeting, and not long ago we were reading, working with others. I know, I'll cry here now. These are sincere tears. If they do come, they're sincere. My tears today, and I do get choked up sometimes, are tears of joy, truthfully. I mean, okay, so I've been sober a long time, and on page 100, they've slipped in this new paragraph. And it says, both you and the newcomer need to walk this spiritual path. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. Now, those are the first two sentences. What it says is that we must follow the dictates of our higher power. And things will come to us, which, this is really paraphrasing, which we could not imagine. And you hear it from almost every speaker. Their life today is more than they could have imagined. And mine is. Kenny and I have both been retired about 15 years. You're together a lot when you're retired. But he exercises a lot, and I do a little, and so we have a separate life and we have a together life. We both sponsor people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we are active in the groups that we are involved in. We go to 4 or 5 meetings a week. And we have a life. My children have forgiven me, and I have wonderful relations with 3 of them. The youngest boy and I do not have a close relationship. We speak and he's friendly. He never calls me just to see how I am, or, you know, we just don't have a close relationship. We are not personality, and I used to feel horrible about it. I still don't like it. I try to stay prepared to embrace a new wife with him, but it hasn't happened yet. He also drinks. You know, it's not real fun when you're a sober person and your family members are drinking. I have other kids that drink, but not like him particularly. My youngest daughter will be 25 years sober next May. And, you know, so I have gone through what she had to go through to prepare herself to become a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm in San Diego. She's in Santa Cruz calling and telling me she's going to kill herself. Well, just not right now, okay? Could you wait just a little while? Let's think about it. Let's start. I mean, time after time after time. And God didn't want to lose her. And so he brought her here to Alcoholics Anonymous. She's become a family practice physician up in Northern California. And she doesn't do AA the way Ken and I do AA. But she knows that AA is why she has such a good life. And she has a very strong spiritual path. She has a great connection with a power greater than herself. The bottom of that paragraph says, you know, that it doesn't matter where you are, if you do this thing, you follow this path, you will persist here. Remarkable things will happen, and it doesn't matter what your circumstances are today, because today can look pretty bleak, even when it's good. In fact, this morning I woke up and it's like, something's not right today, you know? I'm feeling, restless, irritable, and discontented. You relate to that? I don't know why I was that way. It's just my person can be like that. How did Bill know that? A guy with 4 years of sobriety wrote that book and knew all about us. If that's not the hand of God zapping his little mind, what is? Anyway, stuck in traffic. If we go home that way, are we going to be stuck in traffic again? It was very nice of Kelly and Brian to invite me to come up here. And I certainly wish that you all have sober holidays. Thank you very much.